Thank you very much, Rabbi Krinsky, for that very generous introduction, and more importantly, for inviting me to be here. It is a tremendous thrill and an honor to be here. Many familiar faces, some less familiar faces, I look forward to getting to meet over the next few weeks, and it's just a wonderful honor and a pleasure to be here with you for this time. And, for our topic tonight, the topic that was announced, I believe, was Real Halacha for the Virtual World. Of course, there's quite a bit to say about that. If we enter into the realm of the internet, of the digital arena, so we open up an entire new world of complexity, of halachic questions, and we won't be able to cover all of that tonight, but I think some of that which is most directly relevant to the period that we are beginning tonight, of course, not only beginning the Kollel, but unfortunately beginning the 9 days as well. And there are certain themes that have more direct relevance and resonance during that time. So the topics within this area, the internet halacha, that's most directly relevant, hopefully we'll be able to focus on some of that. It's basically become a standard requirement that if anyone talks about internet issues in terms of halacha, in terms of what to watch out for, which invariably focuses on certain negative aspects, that they have to mention at the beginning that they're not against the internet, they like the internet. So I can definitely say that not only as a formality, but as a real fact. I'm very much involved with the internet. I have my BlackBerry in my pocket, I have my iPad in my car together with my laptop. I'm connected 24 hours a day. Certainly not opposed to the internet. I think we all have a sense and a recognition of all of the, or some of the, I guess we're just beginning to see, the wonderful range of what can be accomplished in terms of connecting to others in all of the best senses of the word, in terms of spreading Torah in the most effective and powerful ways. I don't think we need to necessarily convince each other that there is tremendous potential to do wonderful things and tremendous actual realization already of wonderful things through the power of the internet. And therefore, it's understandable if we won't focus on that so much. We'll take that as a given, and we'll take some of the brief time that we have to look a little bit at what we might have to watch out for, and what some of the more classical halachic sources that predate the internet by many centuries, and really don't seem to be talking about it at all, can perhaps be reawakened in a new setting, in a new context, and shed some light on some of the new realities that we are dealing with. And I'm not necessarily focusing here on some of the current questions of inappropriate or dangerous material that's found on the internet, questions of filtering and not filtering. It's largely a technological question, a little bit outside of the scope of what I want to talk about, an important issue, but it's not really our topic I'd like to focus on tonight, or the Shabbos issues that have received a lot of attention recently. It's also not a topic for tonight as much as we are talking about Hilchos Shabbos during this term. I'd like to focus on some of the themes that are more directly relevant, again, to the period of the 9 days, when it's a time, the Talmud tells us, that we have to redirect our attention to how we relate to each other. That the problems of how we relate to each other, what the Talmud terms sinas chinam, the hatred that sometimes develops because of clashes of personality and because of the way we talk about each other, it's that brought about the situation of the exile, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and the assumption is that until we rectify that situation, the exile is not going to end. So therefore, as we begin the 9 days, it seems worth focusing specifically on that concern, on that realm, within this question of how do we relate to the virtual world? How do we look at some of the questions that come up in the context of the internet world? And in doing so we focus on, let's say, the area most prominently. There are other areas as well, but most of our time will focus in this discussion on the area of Lashon Hara, on the area of the prohibition of speaking badly about others. And even at the outset of that discussion, so we know already that's a complex point, that we know that on the one hand, there is a prohibition to speak badly about others, but at the same time, we know there are times and there are contexts in which it's necessary to speak badly about others when it's crucially important, when it's vital for the purposes of protecting the safety of others or informing about topics that are important for one's general well-being. So this is not an issue where there's really an all-or-nothing approach. And even if we were to say that the internet is good for spreading Torah, but bad because you could also use it to speak badly about others, that wouldn't be the whole story either. Because we know that sometimes we need the internet to speak about what's necessary, even if it does reflect negatively. We know that sometimes there is an imperative, that the halacha recognizes and commands a concept known as toeles, which means purposeful, that if you are saying something that is purposeful, necessary, so not only is it permitted, but it's obligatory. So therefore, this is a highly complex issue. And it's worth, therefore, spending some time on some of the questions, some of the complexity, some of the concepts that the Talmud talks about, and trying to figure out how it helps us to make informed decisions in this area. How do we balance this very tricky question, which was tricky before the internet ever came along, the question of how do we balance what we should say and what we shouldn't say, and how does the added layer of complexity that the internet brings, how is that navigated within that area, within that arena? So just to begin with, as a basic introduction, when we talk about this concept of toeles, of this idea that even though we generally are told not to speak negatively about others, nonetheless, there are times when we have to, times when there is what that has to be said to protect others or to advance the welfare of the community as a whole. So there is a general theoretical question that can be asked. In terms of the lumdus, so to speak, in terms of the analytical structure, how does that work? What exactly is going on? What exactly is the thought behind the process? And it seems to be that there are two basic theories as to what is the problem with Lashon Hara. When we say that you're not supposed to speak negatively about others, so what exactly is the nature of that issue? And there are two basic conceptions of the issue. On the one hand, there is the idea that it's a bad character trait, that to indulge in gossip, to engage in negativity, to cast others in a mean spirit, that's something that not only is harmful to them, but it's harmful to us. It erodes our character, it takes away from our own personal dignity, and it's something that's not in keeping with the character and the persona of the observant Jewish mindset. So there are those who understand the prohibition of Lashon Hara is essentially what you might call a midos issue. It's a personality character trait issue, and the Torah doesn't want us to be a gossip. The Torah tells us, lo seilech rachil b'yamecha, we should not walk around as talebearers, but instead we should treat each other differently, positively, with generosity of spirit. On the other hand, there are those who see it as more of a practical issue, that it has to do with harming others, that I can harm people by hitting them, by hurting them, or I could harm them by speaking badly about them in an unfair way, by saying things that are either untrue or unnecessary, things that are mean in spirit and ungenerous, and in doing so, cause them actual harm, actual problems. And even though the Talmud tells us that I'm only liable, you can only extract damages from me if I actually physically harm you, if I cause harm. That's what we call a grumma, so that's normally not actionable, but it's still prohibited, as the Chafetz Chaim points out, that if I cause you harm, if I cause you suffering, because I do something that brings about that situation, so that's a prohibition, and it could be that Lashon Hara is framed in such a way. So two perspectives, either it's a character issue, it's about my midos, or it's a practical issue about causing people harm, about hurting people by speaking badly about them. Those two theories help us to understand what exactly do we mean when we say there is an exception when something is necessary. If I need to protect someone from harm, if let's say somebody's about to marry someone or go into business with someone who is not going to be good for them for whatever range of reasons, so in such a setting I'm not only permitted but I'm obligated to say what the issue is. So how do we understand that conceptually? So if we understand Lashon Hara as an issue of character, it's not right for me to engage in gossip, so then we could suggest that when there's a purpose, that's not gossip. Gossip by its very nature is pointless, has no reason, has no driving necessity. And if I'm saying something to protect someone, so it's simply not within the heading of Lashon Hara. That's simply not called gossip at all, and perhaps is simply completely permitted as not being a part of the prohibition at all. Alternatively, if I say that the issue is I'm not allowed to hurt someone through speech, if I speak badly about them, I'm going to cause them problems. So if I deprive somebody of a shidduch, let's say, deprive somebody of a business arrangement because I say bad things about them, so am I hurting them? Certainly. I definitely am. However, I have an overriding goal. I have something else that's more important than protecting them, and that's protecting the innocent. The Torah tells us, Lo samar al dam reyecha, we can't stand by when somebody is at risk, when there is somebody who poses a predatory role against somebody else, and therefore the protection of the innocent overrides the protection of this person about whom I otherwise wouldn't be speaking badly about. And it's in that context, it's noteworthy that the Torah has both of these ideas in the same pasuk, in the same verse in Parshas Kedoshim. The Torah tells us, Lo seilech rachil b'yamecha, I shouldn't walk around as a talebearer, and goes on to say, Lo samar al dam reyecha. However, do not stand by when someone is at risk. Normally, I wouldn't speak badly about someone, but if I need to protect someone, then that takes priority. That's what has to be done. So these two understandings give us a little bit of a background, a little bit of a framework to understanding what type of calculations we're making, what type of evaluations are being put forward when we try to assess how we're going to balance our priorities here. How are we going to try to do justice to the different values, to the different ideas that we are trying to uphold, which can sometimes pose a clash and a conflict to each other? How do we properly esteem both sides of the equation so that we will come up with the right conclusions, so that we'll make the right decisions? And one way to do that is to be as well-versed as we can and as attentive as we can to the principles that are relevant so that we can understand how they interact with each other and we can make the right decisions. And to help us try to understand some ideas that are particularly relevant to the internet culture, we'll go back a couple of centuries, way before there ever was an internet, to the time of the Talmud. The Talmud has two statements, which it's not clear how they affect practical halacha. It's a major discussion, as we'll see. And both of them seem to be highly counterintuitive. Both of them are very surprising. Let's posit for a moment, make up a name of somebody who's not in the room. I don't know who is in the room. Give me a name of somebody. Shmelky. Is no one here named Shmelky? So let's say, if I were to say, Shmelky is a jerk, right? If I were to speak badly about Shmelky to all of you here, let's assume for a moment that's Lashon Hara, correct? If I say something negative about Shmelky, Shmelky is not a danger to anyone. I'm just making fun of him getting up here saying something negative about Shmelky. Can we agree that that would be a prohibition of Lashon Hara? Presumably. Okay. Let's say if I were to say that to one person, let's keep it small for a second. I would take one person aside and say, Shmelky, he's a nerd, whatever. He's not so impressive. That's Lashon Hara. If I say it in front of this whole room with the tapes running, that makes it better or that makes it worse? Presumably that makes it worse. Right? If it's a problem for me to say it to one person, if I would say it to every person in this room with the tapes running, I think logic would tell me that would make it much worse. Let's add another variable. Let's say right before I say it, Shmelky himself walks in, takes a seat right over there. And then I say the same demeaning thing about Shmelky, and he's here. That makes it better or that makes it worse? Makes it worse, I would assume. We'll throw humiliation to a list of charges. I would assume that makes it worse. So what's surprising and perhaps a little bit hard to understand is that the Talmud says the opposite of both assumptions we just made. The Talmud has two mysterious statements which prompted a lot of discussion, and I'd like to share with you a little bit some of the various understandings that have been brought forward and what they can shed light on for us today. On the one hand, the Talmud says in two places, Kol milsa dis amra ape tlasa lesbuhu mishum lishnevisha, which means I have to translate it a little bit vaguely because we'll see it's a little bit of a discussion what it means, but any matter that is spoken in front of three people is not subject to the prohibition of Lashon Hara. doesn't have a prohibition. Three people being shorthand for public. The Talmud says that three people means something is already a matter that is publicly known. Chavra, chavra, isla, your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a cousin who has an uncle, who has a neighbor, who has a dog watcher, who has a babysitter, who knows somebody else, that essentially if three people know, the whole world knows. So the Talmud's basically saying if something is public knowledge, three people meaning public knowledge, or if it's in public, let's say it that way in order to leave room for the various interpretations, if something's in public, no Lashon Hara. It's the opposite of what we said. Hard to understand. In one of these two places, the Talmud also says that Kol Milsa dis Amra Api Mara Les Behu Mishum Lishnabisha, which roughly translated means that anything that is said in front of the subject, our Shmelki, anything that is said in his presence is also not subject to the prohibition of Lashon Hara. Once again, the opposite of what we said. We took it for granted that if it's bad in private, it's worse in public, and it's much worse if he's there. Both of those cases, the Talmud tells us, it's okay. Public is good. If he's there, it's good. What's going on? So there are a number of interpretations. We'll start first with the idea of public. What exactly does it mean when it says that there's no prohibition of Lashon Hara if something is public? So there are about four different interpretations, four different schools of thought as to what that means. And I'll try to quickly go through the four with you now. And it's interesting, the Chafetz Chaim and his Sefer, the Chafetz Chaim recommends that we take into account all four interpretations. And I don't think, as much as this may be characteristic of him as a style in general, I don't think he's simply being stringent in this case. I don't think he's saying, well, Lashon Hara is a biblical prohibition, so we have to be machmir, we have to be stringent. I don't think that's what's going on. I think what he's saying is that all four of these interpretations reflect something genuine about human nature. And we don't really know what the Talmud means. It's a mysterious statement. We have four different possible suggestions. They all represent something real and genuine about how people react. Therefore, we have to take all of them into account. What are these different interpretations? There are many different nuances, but just broadly speaking, we'll quickly go through some of them. So one interpretation is probably the most familiar interpretation. It's probably the one that if I had to ask you to guess what it means, you'd probably come up with, the most commonly assumed interpretation. And that's really the view that perhaps is associated with the Rambam, also the Rashbam, in his commentary to Bava Basra, where this statement appears. Various Rishon, various of the earlier commentators, who suggest that what are we referring to? When we say something is public, then there's no problem with Lashon Hara. Who are we talking about? We're talking about the audience. We're not saying that the speaker is in any way excused because he's speaking in public. You're probably right. It's worse for him to speak in public than in private. But the listener can assume that if he hears something in public, if he knows something was said in front of a group of people, he has the right to assume that it's already public knowledge. And therefore, for him to repeat it after this, he's not adding any further violation. He's not committing any further problem towards the subject because the matter is already public knowledge. This is the way some of the Rishonim understand it. And there are a number of questions to ask. One could ask, okay, just because it's going to become public knowledge doesn't mean you have the right to accelerate the process. It's like saying if somebody leaves his door open, it's okay for you to steal his stuff, because you could say, well, it's going to get stolen anyway. I might as well be the one to steal it. It's not really understandable why that should be the case, especially because this whole situation is built on the original speaker doing the wrong thing, and then you're able to take the ball and run with it. A lot of questions are raised about that interpretation. Some note that the Rambam has a very interesting formulation. The Rambam and the Rashbam, we mentioned they both say this, there's slight nuances between them. The Rashbam is focusing on what we call rechilus. Rechilus is more a category, not that I'm saying so-and-so is a jerk, but so-and-so said you're a jerk. So when I tell you that what this person said about you, and now you're going to get angry at him, that's called rechilus. So the Rashbam is talking about that. He says if it was said in front of a lot of people, he knows it's going to get back to you. You're not adding any extra problem by saying it back to the person who you're speaking about. The Rambam, when he formulates it, he adds an important clause. He says that you're allowed to repeat something that was said in public, but he adds an important nuance, as long as you don't have intent to spread the matter further. In other words, it just comes up in the normal course of conversation, but you're not trying to make it get further than it would normally get. There's a whole discussion in the later works where he gets this from. It's not in the Talmud. How does he know this is a rule? So some suggest that it answers the question that we mentioned a minute ago, that you have no right to accelerate the process. You can assume that by the normal method of communication, it's going to get out there, but it's not your job to do it more quickly. So if it comes up in conversation, you can discuss it, but you can't have intent to try to spread it further. Others suggest, and there is some evidence to this, that the Rambam is actually discussing two different types of Lashon Hara, which correlate to the two models we spoke about before. But on the one hand, the Rambam believes there is a midos issue. There's a character problem. A character problem involves in Lashon Hara. It's not nice to gossip about people. So that would apply even if something is public knowledge. If there's no point in discussing it, if it's not a matter of public safety or public welfare, so then even if it's public knowledge, it would seem there's no reason to talk about it. But the Rambam seems to restart, when he discusses the laws of Lashon Hara, he seems to talk all over again and say there's also an issue when you say something about somebody that will cause them harm, even if you're not trying to be a gossip. Even if you're just simply talking about things in a way that will bring them damage because it will embarrass them, because it will reveal private information, because it will somehow put them in a bad spot. So then the Rambam says that's also prohibited, a separate prohibition, a prohibition not of nastiness, but of causing people problems, of harming them. And in that context, he says, if it's already known, if it's public knowledge, so then you're not making things any worse by revealing it. So therefore, it's consistent with that understanding that he says, however, you can't have intent to try to spread it around, to try to hurt the person, because that puts you right back in the first category of being a gossip. So all of that is the most common understanding of what's going on, that this is what the ape tlus, or public knowledge rule, means, that if it's already out there, so then if you have innocent intentions in talking about it, you're not making things any worse. There's a similar interpretation, a second interpretation, a much more narrowly applicable case, Rashi in his commentary to the Talmud elsewhere, who says that it's talking about a very specific type of information. Because Rashi says that if the speaker revealed what he revealed in front of more than three people, so then it made it clear that he's not worried about it getting out. He knows that it's going to be public knowledge. He said it in front of a room full of people on a tape recorder. He knows it's going to get out there. So then there's nothing wrong with your repeating it. So that's a very narrow category, because it's assuming the speaker himself has the right to let it be spread. So it must be that it's only talking about, let's say, things that he reveals about himself, which are privacy issues. So if he said it to you in private, you might think it's an issue of confidentiality. But if he says it in public, so then it's clear he's not worried about confidentiality, you're allowed to repeat it. So that's a much more narrow territory, but that's also similar to the first interpretation of talking about the listeners. The other interpretations, the other two, do refer to the speaker. That somehow the speaker is more justifiable because he's speaking in public. Why is that? How could that make any sense? That's what seems to fly in the face of our assumption before, that it doesn't make sense, that in public it should be worse. So one spin on this idea is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says that we're talking about something that you need to say for the purposes of toelus, for the purposes of making a difference. So if you're trying to make a difference, so then you have to say it in a way that's going to have a consequence. If you're just going to whisper it to somebody in private, so then it's just gossip, even if it's an important point, but you're not saying it in a way that it's going to get to where it needs to get to, so then there's no reason to say it. It's only going to have its effect, Rabbeinu Yonah assumes, if you say it in a public setting. So therefore, if it's really justifiable, you should say it in a way that's going to make a difference. That's how Rabbeinu Yonah understands what it means. But there's another understanding which I think is very fascinating and really sheds light on our current internet culture. And that's the view of Tosfos. The grandsons of Rashi on the outside of the page have a different interpretation. And they connect it to our second surprising statement. We said the second thing the Talmud says that we wouldn't have expected is called milsa desamri ape mar, anything said in front of the subject, in front of Shmelki, that's considered to be okay. That's considered to not be lashon hara. Anything said in public or anything said in front of the subject. Why should that be? Why does that not make it worse? Says Tosfos as follows. What are we talking about? Says Tosfos. We're talking about a very specific type of information. You're not getting up there and saying negative things. You're getting up and saying something which you actually mean positively. But it's a little bit ambiguous. It could be interpreted positively, could be interpreted negatively. Let's say, for example, I want to say, Shmelki, you can always count on him. So maybe you'll take that positively to say, oh, he's reliable, he's trustworthy, you can always count on him. Or maybe you'll take it negatively. Oh, Shmelki, can always count on him to make a fool of himself. You can always count on him to mess up. So maybe as the speaker, I have to worry that you're going to take it the second way, that it's going to cast Shmelki in a bad light. So says Tosfos, yes, that's really a concern. However, if you're saying it in public, or you're saying it in front of him, that's a control. That will show your audience that you mean it positively. If I take you aside privately and I say, Shmelki, you can always count on him, you might not have any idea how to interpret that. But if I get up at the shul dinner with Shmelki sitting right here and I say, Shmelki, you can always count on him, so then hopefully the context will make it clear that I mean it in the positive sense. Because I'm saying it in public, I'm saying it in front of him, that shows that my content, my intent, must be positive. The question I think it's fair to ask ourselves today is, does that assumption still hold? Today, conversations take place on the internet. The internet is not Ape Tlasa, it's Ape 6 billion. The entire world has access, or theoretically the entire world has access to what's on the internet. And if they don't catch it today, they'll catch it 20 years from now, because it'll be there forever, or Google will find it. So this is not only Ape Tlasa, this is Ape 6 billion in the most expansive sense you could ever imagine. And it's Ape Mara. Among those 6 billion who will see what you're saying are the person you're talking about. So is it still true what Tosfos assumes? Is it the case that when a person is speaking in such a context, in front of many people, in front of the person he's talking about, well, in that case, he would never say something unnecessarily that's going to be hurtful? I'm not so sure it's still the case. I think we've all seen that it's very likely that we lose that sensitivity, that the disconnect that sometimes happens when you're safely behind a computer screen changes the assumption. What Tosfos thought was a given about how decent Jews talk about each other is no longer the case. And that's something that I think it's crucial that we have a tremendous awareness of. And that's before we even come on to the concept of anonymity. Even without anonymity, there is a recognized reality known as the online disinhibition effect, that when you're sitting in your pajamas behind a computer screen, you don't see who you're talking to, so there is a much greater latitude, a disinhibition. People will say things, write things, type things that they never would have said otherwise. That's for sure there. But you can only imagine when you add in the factor of anonymity how unrestrained people get. And this is not a new discussion. This already goes back to Plato and before and after him, when he posited the question, if one would have a magic ring that could give someone invisibility, so can we trust that he would all behave in a moral fashion? So there's no question that this is a reality today, that if we assume that there are any prohibitions regarding how we talk about each other, so there's no question today we have a context in which people can talk with complete anonymity and invincibility and impunity. So we have to ask ourselves, what effect does that have on how we talk about each other? And therefore, this puts a tremendous sense of responsibility when we're putting out content on the internet and the World Wide Web. how we're going to write about others, how we're going to talk about others, if we're going to write about others and talk about others, to make sure that our sensitivity is where we want it to be, to make sure that our mentality is consistent with the mentality that we need to have. Not that we can never say anything negative. Sometimes we will have to say something negative. Sometimes there'll be a pressing need to say something because others need to be protected or the welfare of society needs to be enhanced. But will our sensitivity be the same sensitivity that it's always been? That's a question that we need to pay careful attention to. And it's not only the straight issues of what we write about others, but there are all types of other concerns to have, and we'll just very quickly mention a few. One concern is there is a concept not only of Lashon Hara, but of Avak Lashon Hara. The Talmud tells us that if I not only say something bad, but even if I say something good, but it's something good that's likely to provoke someone else to argue. If I say this guy is great, knowing that the person I'm talking to is going to say, oh, you think he's so great, let me tell you a few stories. If I know that it's likely to provoke a negative reaction, so the Talmud suggests, different views and Rishonim how to understand this, the Talmud suggests I'm liable for what I provoke. And therefore, for example, in a comment section on an internet page, so one has to worry not only about what he writes, but also what kind of conversation he provokes, what type of discussion will ensue. This is all within the arena of responsibility that comes up when one is entering into such behavior, one's entering into such an arena. So this is a major concern. There are many other major concerns. It's also a problem even when you're disseminating things that are in the news, things that are in established sources of the media. We also have to be careful how we do that, because we recognize newspapers make mistakes also, and therefore promoting it in a context where it will be given too much weight is also a part of the responsibility of one who deals and publishes on the internet. And there is a major concern also of a whole separate prohibition called Onas Devarim. If you cause someone emotional pain, it's something that happens all the time on internet sites, it's not necessarily a function of Lashon Hara, but let's say, for example, Rahman al-Islam, there's some kind of a tragedy in the community, So a news site and all good intention will announce the tragedy. Maybe we need to know about a funeral or a shiva. And the comments will speculate about this or about that, all kinds of things that they would never say to the grieving family, but they would never think that the grieving family is reading these comments. And therefore, the whole inhibition that normally comes with face-to-face contact, which would stop someone from violating the prohibition of Anas Devarim. Here we're talking about things that have no value or no consequence in terms of helping society, but we tend to lose sight of what we're doing. That's a very major concern as well. And there's also, on the one hand, the major positive, very, very major positive that comes out of the ability to do greater chesed because we are connected to people because of our greater web relationships. That's a tremendous thing, there's no question. Can't tell you how many birthday wishes I got from people I haven't seen in 20 years thanks to the internet. But that's obviously a very minor component when it comes to chesed. But at the same time, the question of connectedness, as crucial as that is, so we sometimes lose sight of what it really means to be connected when we are connected in such a nebulous way to so many people. Sometimes our actual connections become weaker. There's a fascinating book that came out recently called Hamlet's Blackberry, which details this in a fascinating description of how exactly that could happen. And that's also a consequence that during this time of year, it's worth our giving greater focus to, greater attention to. So all of this is very important in terms of what we put out there, in terms of what we write, in terms of what we say about others. And it also leaves a question, which we'll just quickly address and we'll end soon, a question of what do we do as consumers? What do we do as readers? So let's say we're not writing anything. Let's say we're not generating any content. But what about reading? So is there a problem, for example, when it comes to Lashon Hara? So we know there's also a prohibition not only of speaking, but there's a prohibition maybe as bad or worse, known as Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, accepting Lashon Hara, which prompts a whole discussion. What exactly does that mean, accepting Lashon Hara? Is it a question of believing what you're told? Or is it a question of allowing it to have a negative impact? That was a topic of debate between the Chafetz Chaim and the Chazon Ish, and Moshe Sternbach and others. There's extensive literature about that. And it's important sometimes to recognize that there's a difference between what we might call listening and accepting. It's clear these are not the same things. So therefore, that's also sometimes a distance that it's worth working to create. The Chafetz Chaim writes, for example, that hearing Lashon Hara is not the same thing as accepting Lashon Hara. Accepting Lashon Hara is a much more active role. But, he writes, hearing is also a bad idea because it's clearly a very short jump from hearing to accepting. But sometimes it's important to have that jump. It's important to be informed sometimes for our own safety, for our own understanding of our community. But then it's also crucial to recognize that not everything is accurate, and sometimes to be able to create more of a space between listening / reading and fully accepting is what it means to be an intelligent consumer. This is particularly relevant to those who would be the leader of a community, rabbis and others. So the Chaim Ozer Gradinsky emphasized, he thought it was crucially important for leaders of communities always to be aware of what's being said, to know what's being claimed, and at the same time, therefore, to have a sense of what's believable and what's not, what's true and what's not. And sometimes it's necessary, therefore, to create a greater space. And the open nature of the internet puts an even greater responsibility on us to be able to create that space when necessary. There's a sefer that came out this year on Hilchos Lashon Hara, which says, a ruling which I think is incorrect, I disagree with, it says that if somebody tells you that it says such and such in the newspaper, so you have the right to believe at least that it's in the newspaper, because the newspaper could have gotten it wrong, but you have the right to believe that it's there because the person wouldn't lie about such a thing, because you could easily check for yourself, you could open it up, so we call a milsa David Ligluye, so therefore you can trust that at least that much is true. I don't think that's accurate, because it's not a question of whether or not somebody would willingly lie, but it's unfortunately the case that very often people don't understand what they read in the newspaper. And if you want to test that theory, open up any news site and read the comments, see how many of them completely misunderstood what the newspaper was saying. So even if we assume the newspaper got it right, very often those who interpret the articles, those who read the articles, completely misunderstand them. So therefore, again, there's a responsibility on the listener, on the consumer, to be an intelligent consumer, to understand what is the open nature, especially of the internet, especially of the modern news element, which takes on a different tone, which takes on a different method of operation. There's a fascinating book that came out recently called Blur. It's written by two authors, their name is Rosenstiel and Koch. And they talk about this question of how to be an intelligent news consumer in the modern context, where before the internet even, you have the 24-hour news cycle, so it's not like they have a day to digest the news, to decide what's true and what's not, and to try to give the most responsible presentation. But the news is running 24 hours a day, so as they put it, now the ingredients of the news is presented to the audience as news before it is digested, before it is processed. And therefore, again, there's a higher level of responsibility on the consumer to try to understand what's true and what's not true and what it takes to be a knowledgeable individual in the modern society. So all of this is our responsibility. All of this is part of what we try to do so that we can be correctly informed, so that we can be responsibly informed about what our problems are, what our realities are, while at the same time respect the boundaries of a halacha that tells us there is a prohibition of Lashon Hara, a prohibition of Anas Dvarim, that we have to have these goals in balance, that we have to be able to have a perspective that includes what we need to know and what we need to do and what we aren't meant to say and what we aren't meant to talk about. And the only path that we have in our society where we believe in embracing all of the wonderful technology and all of the wonderful access to information that can bring us such wonderful blessing, the way that we manage that is by maintaining our sensitivity to all of the halakhic values on either side of the spectrum, by working to learn and to understand these principles so that we'll make the right decisions, so that we will have an intelligent understanding of what's in front of us, and that the problems that bring us into Gullus, the problems that lead us to the situation of the 3 weeks, should no longer be a part of our mindset, and that we should return to Tzion with happiness and with joy. So we'll end here. I'll just very quickly review what we spoke about. So we talked a little bit, just very quickly, about the concern of Lashon Hara that is sometimes more prevalent in the digital world, and how on the one hand there is a obligation to say something which is necessary, but we still have a prohibition to not say things which are not necessary. We mentioned two basic constructs of what Lashon Hara is. Either it's a problem of character, of being a gossip, or it's a problem of hurting someone through speech, of saying something that's going to cause problems, and therefore the idea of toelus, of justifiable required Lashon Hara, could be understood in two ways. Either that it's not a character issue because it's not gossip, it's not unnecessary, or it is hurting someone, but it's justifiable because it's protecting the innocent, and lo samad al dam riecha takes priority over the problem of speaking badly about the predator, if that's the case. And then we talked about the question of how it seemingly is worse to speak about somebody if you're doing it in public or in their presence, yet the Talmud says that both of these are apparently permitted. In public is not Lashon Hara, and the presence of the subject is not Lashon Hara. We mentioned four different understandings of why that should be in terms of public, either because it's already well known, so you're not adding any damage. That was the view of the Rambam and the Rashbam. We mentioned the Rambam's important clause that in such an understanding, you're not allowed to do it specifically to spread it, but only if it comes up naturally. We mentioned some explanations of why that might be. We mentioned Rashi's view that it's only talking about a confidentiality issue. If the speaker is speaking in public, you can assume that he's allowing you to speak about it further. And then we talked about the other understandings that say the speaker is justified because he's speaking in public. So either Rabbeinu Yonah, because that's how you will affect the positive change by actually saying it in front of people who will be able to do something, or the view of Tosfos, which we were most interested in, that links it to the idea of speaking in front of the person, who says that we're talking about saying something which is ambiguous, therefore maybe it shouldn't be said, but if you say it in a public setting or in front of the subject, it's clear that you mean it positively. And then we raise the question, is that assumption still true in the internet age? Can we still assume that in this setting where the whole world is seeing something and the subject is seeing it, that it's only going to be done with decent motives and with respect for the sensitivities that are relevant and applicable? And we raise the possibility that might not still be the case. And then we talked about the online disinhibition factor, which contributes to a certain disconnect. And then if you add in anonymity, of course, that makes things much further, makes things much worse. And we talked a little bit about addressing that. And we talked about the question of avak lashon hara, not only about what you say, but what you provoke others to say, also being a part of the responsibility. We talked about the question of kabbalas lashon hara, of promoting others to accept something which may not necessarily be accurate. And then we talked about the question of anos devarim, of causing somebody emotional pain by saying things that you would never say to their face, but by saying them in a way they're going to read it, you're causing the same type of emotional pain, and yet you're disconnected from it. We talked about the issue of chesed, about being connected and the value of that, but how this could also create a disconnect, how that's also a problem. And then we talked about, therefore, as consumers, what do we need to do? We talked about what the prohibition of Kabbalah Lashon Hara means, that we shouldn't accept something even if we hear it. We should know how to discern between what's meant to be accepted and what's not, which takes a certain level of skill. We talked about the differences between a communal leader who has a greater responsibility to hear everything, but yet also has to know what's believable and what's not believable. And then we talked a little bit about the whole question in general, about how the news cycle and the internet processing of the news sometimes creates a greater urgency, which is not always in the interest of accuracy, and how it's our responsibility to be informed and educated in a way so that we come to responsible conclusions in proper deference to the value of Lashon Hara and Anos Devarim and all of the values that we're trying to keep in balance, so that we can properly rectify the situation of the 9 days and the 3 weeks, and that we should see a geula b'mehera b'yameinu. I thank you very much. Yeah.
We're going to be talking to Marav after we take some questions.